Good afternoon. We are lucky to be joined today by our National Incident Commander, and I'm sure you all read the press release yesterday, newly retired Admiral Thad Allen. Joining us today sans his several decades of uniform to give us an update on the BP oil spill, our response to the Deepwater Horizon, and I will give it over to him.
Thanks, Ron. Thank you.
Afternoon. As you can see, my wife's taken me to a men's store in the last couple weeks. It was an honor to serve in the United States Coast Guard for 39 years, and today I transitioned to a senior executive on Secretary Napolitano's staff as I carry on my duties as a National Incident Commander. So with that, a quick overview on what's going on. As you know, the hurricane passed by, generated some swells and weather up towards the well site. That required us to delay bringing on board the third production vessel, the Helix Producer, which we thought we would have online by today. We will need about 3 days after the weather calms to less than 3 to 5 feet for that vessel to be able to hook up to the flexible coupling that it would be required to do. So we're looking at somewhere around midweek next week to bring the third production vessel online. It'll bring our capacity up to 53,000 barrels per day. In the 24-hour period that ended last night at midnight, we actually recovered 23,000 barrels. The Discover Enterprise had to stop operations a couple of times due to lightning in the area. As you remember, we had a situation a few weeks ago where lightning struck the derrick and caused a fire. So there's some safety reasons why they might have to stop from time to time. And the Q4000 actually flared 8,200 barrels. Regarding the relief wells, Development Driller 3 now is at a distance of 11,641 feet below the seafloor. As you know, they're going through a series of operations which we call ranging. They're into their fourth cycle of this. In ranging, they withdraw the drill pipe and put down an electrical cable and actually try and sense the magnetic field around the wellbore. They are within around 15 feet of the wellbore at this point. They will continue down 700-800 more feet, slowly close into the wellbore, and when they know they've got it exactly in range, know exactly where the drill pipe is in relation to the wellbore, then they will attempt to move in and drill through the wellbore and then the casing as well. That will at that point, they'll be in a position to be able to try the bottom kill or to be able to insert the mud, and hopefully after that, put a cement plug in that will kill the well. The Development Driller 2 is 6,720 feet below the seafloor and is making progress as well. Our onshore and nearshore skimming and recovery operations have been significantly hampered by the weather. The small vessels that do the skimming have a difficult time operating out there. We had to pull them back. The same with the vessels operating in and around the well site itself. The drilling rigs were able to continue, but we are now massing our forces to be able to move right back out once the weather will allow us to get on the water and skim. In some of the areas, such as Barataria Bay and other places, we were able to have back bay skimmers and actually make some progress there. But in general, waiting for the weather to abate so we can move on with recovery operations.
Happy to take questions on this or other topics today.
Admiral Allen, can you talk about this new 20-meter safety zone and if that was done at BP's request or what the reason is to do this at this stage in the crisis?
Can you be more specific?
The safety zone for vessels around booms and other oil response.
That's not unusual at all for the Coast Guard to establish either safety or security zones around any number of facilities or activities for public safety and for the safety of the equipment itself. We would do this for marine events, fireworks demonstrations, cruise ships going in and out of port.
Right, but we're so far into this disaster now. Why do it now and why the new?
I actually had some personal complaints from some county commissioners in Florida and some other local mayors that thought that there was a chance that somebody would get hurt or they would have a problem with the boom itself. Had not presented itself before, but once presented with it, logical thing to do.
So it wasn't a BP request?
No, I don't.
And then one really quickly for you, Robert, on the climate bill. I think some environmentalists are under the impression that the administration is now asking for a vote before August and limiting any kind of cap or pricing to the electric utilities. Is that accurate?
Well, look, we have said that, and the Senate has said that after coming back from the recess, one of the things that they will do is likely take up energy. We think that's the right thing to do. The president had a good meeting a couple of days ago with bipartisan, with senators from both parties that have led on this issue. We've not made any final determinations about the size and scope of the legislation, except to say that the president believes and continues to believe that putting a price on carbon has to be part of our comprehensive energy reform.
So he had to decide to get just one industry, for
instance? No, again, this is, whether this is energy or immigration, this is going to have to be something that's discussed with Democrats and Republicans alike. Yes, sir.
Thanks. Well, first, the Admiral, do you believe, will the skimming operation start again this weekend, or do you know when that will start again?
It depends on the type of skimming equipment in the sea state. Some of the larger vessels that operate offshore will be able to get out quicker. When you get over 3 to 5 feet, some of the smaller skimmers, say 30, 40 feet in length, have a very difficult time operating and being effective, so it'll be weather-based.
There were some rumors in the financial markets today that the well had been capped, which is obviously not true. Is there any information that we haven't gotten about progress?
Including me.
Right.
Nothing that I'm aware of. I would say this, as they get closer to the wellbore, getting in a position to make that final drilling into the wellbore and the casing itself, there is a chance, a slight chance, they could nick the wellbore. Because of that, they have a vessel up there that's full of mud waiting to be able to shoot it in if they have a problem there, but nothing to my knowledge.
Robert, along the same lines, can you give us an idea as to when the administration will be releasing its new report on, or its new decision on offshore drilling?
I think that will come from the Department of Interior, I would expect, in the next few days.
In the next few days?
Yes, sir.
Great. And one non-oil spill-related question. Mm-hmm. There's growing fear among economists and in financial markets about the possibility of a double-dip recession. The president met with Chairman Bernanke earlier this week. Is that a concern that the president has, and are you preparing plans or a way to address that now?
Well, look, we continue to work towards improving our economy, creating an environment for job creation. The Senate took up, I think 2 days ago, a cloture vote on our small business lending initiative that the House had previously passed. Obviously, we believe financial reform is a big part of our economic recovery, so that we don't find ourselves in the same situation this September that we did 2 years ago. So I would just simply say we continue each and every day to look at and to monitor events here. And obviously, we now understand over the course of the past several months, the news that from overseas, can how much that can affect our markets here and economic prospects here. So the economic team continues to look at and advise the president on anything that they believe would be important to continuing our economic recovery. You heard the vice president a week or so ago come in here and describe the ramping up of projects inside of the Recovery Act that's taking place this summer. We'll get new jobs numbers obviously tomorrow. And we'll get a chance to evaluate sort of where we are.
Does that word double dip come up in those morning economic briefings?
Our economic conditions and the plight that we face based on the fact that the pothole that we're in, if you will, if you look at that chart, what I mean by that is the chart that I show you guys on the amount of job loss that of 8.5 million jobs. Obviously, you're always concerned about the trajectory of and the fragility of that recovery. That's been the case, though, honestly, Jeff, since the moment we walked in here. The state of the economy is constantly on our mind.
Yes, sir. Hey, Robert, on immigration reform, what are the chances that enough Republicans will come on board and that this will get done this year, 2020?
Well, look, if you had, as you heard the president say, look, well, let me start this way. I think where there's a will, there's a way, right? If there is a will among Democrats and Republicans, specifically Republicans on this issue, then there's a way. We know that's true. We have, as you heard the president talk about, Republicans that have supported this in the past that haven't been as supportive or as vocal in their support of comprehensive reform as they have been in the past, as they were when, as the president lauded former President Bush for dealing with this issue. We know this, that the issue of immigration and immigration reform has been in the news a lot lately because of the steps that were taken in Arizona. We understand that we can't have each state have its own immigration law, and that it's up to those in Washington to solve the problems that have existed, quite frankly, for many, many years. So where there is a will on the Republican side of the aisle, there will be a way for, forward on comprehensive immigration reform.
And on the oil spill, if I may, House Republicans today released a report that's critical of the administration's cleanup efforts. Specifically, they say that they have evidence that administration officials, quote, have misrepresented key facts, including the number of assets dedicated to cleaning up the spill, the timing of when officials knew about the oil leak. What is your response to that?
Well, I think we've been pretty transparent throughout this response. I've stood up here and talked to you all very frankly. I've given you the numbers that we have. The numbers are rolled up from the reports we get from the folks that are downrange there. I've been downrange myself. I've been to all four states. I go frequently, travel both the president and the vice president this week. Every indication I have that the numbers are coming up are the numbers that are there. You can always find a place where there's somebody on the beach not cleaning, or it's empty. You can find a piece of water where there's no skimmer. It's just that big an area down there. But this thing has evolved from the start into from a massive monolithic oil spill into thousands and hundreds of thousands of small patches of oil. It's required us to change our tactics, move to a more skimmer-based approach from the boom approach that was originally requested by the governors. But I think throughout the entire life cycle of the event, we've been pretty upfront with the resources that have been out there.
So it's more about the complexity of this operation rather than transparency?
Well, there's no doubt it's the most complex thing we've ever been involved in. It's transformed itself way beyond a normal oil spill response. And early on, the governors are very concerned about protecting their resources with boom, and we put a lot of boom out. And we're to the point now where we're double and triple booming places. And our goal is to approach 200% of the basic boom requirement to just continue to do that to make sure we're protecting everything as much as we can. But the fact that the nature of the spill has changed, we have new flow rate numbers several weeks ago, as you know, that's put a premium on skimming capability. All kinds of skimming capability, very shallow skimming capability into the back areas like Barataria Bay to the very heavy duty skimmers offshore, and we're very aggressively acquiring those right now. And that's the spill has evolved, and we've evolved with it.
Let me just add to this, Dan. I scanned a portion of this. The part of it addresses, or part of what he purports to address, is that somehow it took the command 70 days to accept international help. That is, it's a myth that has been debunked literally hundreds of times. There were already 24 foreign vessels that were operating in the Gulf before the State Department announced 2 days ago additional international assistance. As early as May 11th, boom had arrived from Mexico, Norway, and Brazil. Part of the report mentions that, you know, our failure to waive the Jones Act has been a problem. That, again, a myth that has, I think, been debunked on any number of occasions. And I would say one thing to Congressman Issa. Plaquemines is spelled Plaquemines. Go ahead.
Follow up on that.
The first one to Admiral Allen about the skimmers. I understand that there is somewhat of a super skimmer, a mega ship called the Whale from the Taiwanese. I just wonder, what is the status of approval on that, and how effective do you think that ship will be?
I'm not sure I call that a skimmer. That's I think that's a developmental project that we want to see how it works. The owners made an offer to bring it down at their expense and have it operate in the Gulf area to see if it could be effective. We have worked with EPA and other regulatory agencies to give it a go, and it's down in the area. It will be ready to operate in a couple of days. We're anxious to find out how effective it will be, but it is a very large ship that's been converted to be able to recover oil, and we'll see how it goes.
And we can get a timeline for you. This, I think, came from Portugal, was retrofitted until mid-June in Lisbon, and then made its way down to the Gulf.
All right, do you have high hopes for that?
Well, we have high hopes for anything that can be effective down there. As you realize, this is an all-hands-on-deck evolution. We need to mass our forces, and anything that's effective, we're looking forward to using.
And Robert, to follow on Dan's question about immigration reform, I just wonder, the president is famous for saying that nothing in D.C. happens without a deadline. Why not set one?
We've made progress on this before. We know Washington can do this. But unless or until Republicans that have been doing this before, that have been supportive of immigration reform, that have spoken out eloquently about the need for it, until they get back into this game, and by that I mean into the legislative arena to solve this problem, it's not going to get solved. And that people should understand that. We all know that despite what you learned on Schoolhouse Rock, it's not 50, it's 60 votes in the Senate, right? Probably to rename a courthouse, it takes 60 votes, right? There aren't 60 Democrats in the Senate, and they're not necessarily of the 59 that are there or that normally vote with the Democrats. They may not all support it. You have to have the support of the many Republicans that have in the past believed that comprehensive immigration reform was the only way to move forward.
So if this doesn't get done, is this the president's fault or is this the Republican failure?
I think it is clear. If it wasn't clear before today, the president laid out exactly what the problem was that we've been facing for years. He laid out very specific solutions to what needs to happen. He is ready, willing, and able to work with anybody. But unless or until those on the Republican side come back into this arena and decide this is a situation that they want to solve, it won't be solved.
Admiral, in fact, what is the percentage chance that the Relief Well project is going to work? Is it close to 100%? And what do you think now? Can you pick a date and say when it is really going to happen?
Well, I'm not sure I'm willing to attach a percentage to anything we're doing in this bill. I will tell you this, unlike some other things that have been done on the seabed out there at 5,000 feet, where you heard me say before, we're doing something we've never done before. Relief wells are things that these companies have done before, not just BP, but all the companies. The methods they're using, the technology they're using, it's all been proven in the water, on land. So I think we have a little bit better basis by which to understand the potential for this to be successful. In fact, that they're not reinventing the wheel, if you will. It's something they've done before. We mitigated the risk by having the second well be dug. I've had a lot of detailed briefings, and I've discussed this quite in detail, the technical issues associated with his ranging and how they do that, and this is a very precise method for locating that that well bore. So I think we stand a good chance. I'm not sure I'm going to put a number on it. The current goal is by mid-August. We're slightly ahead of schedule, but I don't think we ought to say we shouldn't come off that mid-August date until we know they've actually gone through the well bore.
A good chance doesn't sound very optimistic.
I'd rather under-promise and over-deliver with you folks.
Okay. Same with us. On the whale, a little more on that. 21 million gallons it can scoop up a day. I mean, it sounds like it could be the closest thing you've had to a silver bullet yet if it works. I mean, is this? Do you see it that way?
Well, we've talked before about modifying tankers and whether or not we could do that. This is one where they actually went out and modified it. The others, we were waiting to have them modified. That's the reason this one's in the fight. A couple of unusual things about working around this well site. First of all, it's very congested. We could have anywhere between 20 and 30 vessels, a number of ROVs operating around there. Industry would call that simultaneous operations or SIMOPS. The oil is only suitable for that type of collection within a few miles of the wellhead itself, because that's when it comes up as a pretty good size slick. It becomes disaggregated after that. So if you have a huge tanker capable of 21 million gallon capacity chasing down half mile slicks, that's probably a different type of platform you want to use for it. So we're going to have to use it right around the well site where it's got the greatest economy of effort in dealing with the oil and where it can give us the greatest return on investment. I think we just need to see how it works.
Robert, if I could ask you about unemployment insurance, who's to blame for Congress leaving town without passing this? How much of a role did the president play? Did the president aggressively get in there and push for this, or did he leave it to Congress?
Well, this is I think last night's effort was the fourth effort to, this one was a scaled back version of unemployment insurance through I believe November with, I, I think a home tax credit added as well. Look, again, this is an example of it takes 60 votes to get something done. It shouldn't take 60 votes to get the long-term unemployed, to make sure that the long-term unemployed do not suffer an interruption in what they need to keep going. It certainly doesn't make any economic sense. We will continue to push Congress and to work with them. Obviously, Senator Byrd's replacement will be at some point back into the voting of all this as well, which obviously is one of the things that we're going to need. But we'll continue to push forward on this so that, again, I think if you just look at the economic sense of, if you're an unemployed, if you're somebody who's unemployed, we now obviously have the type of chronic long-term unemployment that greatly exceeds the previous worst case, which was in the early 80s. We're well past that. If you're worried about long-term economic growth, you have to be worried about the long-term unemployed. I think it's obvious that if you're unemployed, you're far more likely to take your benefits and use them to keep going. That money obviously gets into the economy rather quickly. So we will continue to push forward on this and try to convince 60 senators. We got good help last night from two senators from Maine to try to get what shouldn't be hard to get done for the American people.
Some Republicans say Democrats are just using this as a political issue. They want the issue more than they want the vote, and that the White House is involved in that too.
Chip, we have, again, I think if you read any article about the plight of those that are unemployed and have been unemployed for really long periods of time, we're seeing that like we've never seen it before. We're seeing that impacting not just lower wage, lower skill jobs. It's impacting those with that have been employed for a long periods of time prior to this, that have college educations, folks, quite frankly, that are not used to being in the pool of what would be in a normal recession considered likely to be long-term unemployed. But we're seeing that in a way that we've never seen it before. If they're worried about the politics of this issue, it seems to me it just makes common sense to ensure that people that cannot find work because the recession that we're dealing with is greater than anything we've dealt with since the Great Depression. Why on earth would you take a group that has been chronically unemployed and for some reason stop their unemployment benefits? It just, economically, it makes absolutely no sense at all. Yes,
A few weeks ago, one percentage figure that has been used by the president, I believe you, Admiral, was 90%. A few weeks ago, the president said that in a few weeks, 90% of whatever it is, the gas and the oil and the carbons coming up from the floor would be capped. Where are we on that? 90% of what?
90% of the flow coming out of the wellbore right
Which
now.
Is what?
The current estimate is 35 to 60,000 barrels a day from the last flow rate estimate. Let me walk you through the sequence. It's a good question. Right now, we have three ways to remove oil from that wellbore: the riser pipe that goes up to the Discover Explorer, and the choke and the kill lines. Those are the lines we try to push the mud down during the top kill exercise. We are taking oil out of two of those right now. We intend to take oil out of the third, the kill line, with the Helix producer once the weather calms down. That will take us to a capacity of 53,000 barrels a day. Now, we don't know what that's going to do to that picture you see of the imagery with the vents open and the oil. We would like to get that down where there's a minimum amount of oil escaping as possible, but it's never going to be zero, because if it goes to zero, that means water could intrude and we have a hydrate problem with the capping device. BP has proposed, and we are reviewing right now, the placement of a new cap on it, which they would actually unbolt that stub section of pipe that was cut off. And that's what we call that white area, is called a flange. Actually unbolt the flange and actually put another containment device on that we bolted on that would assure a complete seal. And when the president talks of achieving a greater than 90% recovery rate, he's talking about with the new capping device. They'll be in a position to do that in about 2 to 3 weeks and also provide redundant production capability on the surface. It will take us to 60 to 80,000 barrels a day production capacity. They did that at our direction because we wanted two things. We wanted redundancy. So if there's lightning in the area and somebody has to shut down, we can keep producing. We wanted additional flexibility to be able to unhook and hook up faster in the event of a hurricane. And we also wanted a risk mitigator against equipment failure.
So this new device would essentially replace the three that you have online or are about to have online.
It would allow us to actually run four lines with the new cap.
Yes. When will the president make the determination on when to approve that second cap?
No decision like that is forthcoming right now. We're technically reviewing all of those options right now.
But also, to add a little context to what the Admiral said, the hope for the kill line to the Helix was obviously the end of June, largely around today. Because of weather, equipment had to be taken off of the Enterprise that's needed for the Helix. So the date for, which the Admiral said earlier in the briefing, is sort of midweek next week to bring the kill line to the Helix online that would take us what we believe to a capacity of around 50 to 53,000 barrels a day.
But that's not 90%.
No, the 90% is achieved with the second cap.
Yeah.
Which is 2 or 3 weeks after next week, right?
Let me be specific here. If we're close on the flow rate, the 35 to 60, we could get there with the 53, but we're not as sure because it's not a perfect seal.
You said, maybe I was confused. You said that it was relief well was in 15 feet of the well bore, but you said there's several hundred feet left to bore. I'm not sure I follow you there.
It's within 15 feet, side by side, going down and slowly getting closer till they're sure they know exactly where they're at and they can go in for the
Robert, a question for you back to Congress and pending legislation, the war supplemental. House Democrats want to trim, I guess it's $500 million from the President's Race to the Top program in order to offset the war supplemental.
Right.
What's your feeling about that?
Well, look, we obviously the President has put a lot of energy, as Secretary Duncan has, into the Race for the Top, which is where this money that Congress is looking to take part of. Understand this, and I think it's important that we have a little perspective of what Race for the Top has done, and that is 40-some states that have applied for this have basically undergone the type of education reform that people had hoped to see in this country for decades. That has happened based on the incentive of these investments. We do not believe that taking money out of that important investment makes any sense at all. The President's been clear with Congress about the fact that that doesn't make any sense at all. I believe we can come to a conclusion on this as we've given them additional places to look for cuts that shouldn't require taking away from that important investment that has led to fundamental education reform in this country.
It lead to a veto.
I don't think it'll get to that, but the President has been very clear with the leaders in Congress that money is is important and is a big priority for this administration.
Thank you. You and the President both on immigration have made clear that it's the Republicans who are blocking this from moving forward. Was one of the purposes of the speech today to make it crystal clear to people who care about this issue that it's the Republicans' fault this hasn't moved?
Well, look, I think that's just the legislative reality that we live in. Again, if you had given that speech 3 or 4 years ago, you would likely have, you all could name the Republicans that you were likely to have seen statements from that supported comprehensive immigration reform. I mean, the reality, Laura, is that you can't, again, you got to get 60 votes. There aren't that many Democrats, and you've got to get Republicans involved. This is a problem of national significance, and it is going to require Republicans to be part of that solution.
Was this a political purpose in the sense that you are hoping to
direct the anger from the Hispanic community elsewhere.
Well, I don't think, keep in mind, I don't think it's just the Hispanic community that cares about immigration. This is not about directing anybody's anger. This is about working toward a comprehensive solution. We can't find ourselves having a series of patchwork immigration laws that change every time you see a sign that says welcome to a different state. It has to be done in a comprehensive way, and we have to do this together.
But given that everything he said this morning, he has said in one place or another over time, granted not all in one speech, but has said before, and that you've said before, in fact, how did this speech advance anything?
I think we have talked about immigration reform over the course of the last several weeks, mostly as it relates to what is happening in one state, right? You're not going to solve the immigration problem, again, one state at a time or a series of states at a time. This is a topic that has been talked about for many weeks now, and the only way to solve it is once again for Congress to come together, Democrats and Republicans, and pass a bipartisan comprehensive immigration reform. Mark.
Robert, is the homebuyers tax break extension going to be signed today as well?
I don't know the answer to that. Let me check on
Also, were you able to get an answer from last week when you were asked about Steny Hoyer suggesting considering the possibility of raising the retirement age for Social Security?
Steny Hoyer, or that was, I was asked about Alan Simpson, was I?
It was Hoyer, also last week.
Hoyer said Simpson also.
I went back in the transcript, you asked about Hoyer.
Oh, I don't remember being asked about Hoyer. I don't know the answer to that, but I'll try to look into it.
Any thought on the five Democrats that voted for the new oil spill commission? Do you think that undercuts the president's oil spill commission?
There has been some suggestion. I don't think it's well placed that somehow the commission that the president set up is made up of too many sort of pro-environment members. We've got a commission member from Alaska who has supported drilling in Anwar. The co-director, the former EPA administrator under George Bush, is on leave from the board of ConocoPhillips. There's no way to look at what has happened and what has to move forward in terms of the type of regulatory structure without including voices from industry, and that's what we've done.
You're not worried about dueling commissions, or?
No, I think we'll get this in a place that makes sense moving forward, and it gives us a strong report and a good framework, again, for the type of regulation that's needed to make this type of activity safe again.
Admiral Allen, with the State Department announcement a couple of days ago, what can you do now that you couldn't do before with the assets that you are now bringing in from outside?
Well, actually, 4 to 6 weeks ago, when we saw the skimmer issue start to emerge and we saw a shifting landscape from booming requirements to skimming requirement, we talked to the State Department. They sent a cable out, I believe it was around the 13th of June, actually soliciting input from the countries. A lot of that has come back now. We're in the process where we can screen it, actually do letters of acceptance, and we're moving on that right now. We have well over 100 offers. We're going through them right now. Roughly about 40 of those have been accepted, and we're reviewing all those right now. But we're looking at everything very, very seriously.
So mostly you're increasing skimmer capacity?
It'll come from three areas, basically. Obviously, we're looking for any foreign assistance that can be provided. Almost all the skimmer production capability in this country now is tied up in the orders we've placed out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. We have an emergency rulemaking that was announced yesterday that would ease some of the requirements for standby equipment around the country for other operations that could flow those to the Gulf as well. So the combination of those three together are allowing us to mass our skimming forces in the next 4 weeks.
And if I read the EPA announcement on dispersants correctly yesterday, they said they're safe, but that there still needs to be more testing of the way the dispersants are interacting with the oil and its composition as it sinks to the bottom of the ocean. Is that correct?
The two big deals on dispersants are we've never used them in this quantity before, whether it's subsurface or surface, and we've never used them subsurface. and I know Lisa Jackson, we're very good friends, we talk about this almost daily. She is concerned, she understands when there's an operational imperative and why you need them. And there are times when you do need to do that. But there also is an imperative to do sampling and testing and understand the impacts of the dispersants while they're being used. And it's a trade-off. It's a trade-off operationally, and sometimes it's a trade-off on safety, because dispersants reduce volatile organic compounds, which are a workplace problem for the folks that are working on the ships out there. So what we are trying to do is understand more about the dispersants, use this as a learning situation to get more data on where we're going. And we all generally agree if we can ratchet down the use of dispersants, focus more on skimming and in-situ burning, that's a good thing. But there's a floor to which we're probably going to get to, because there are opportunities we can't achieve to mitigate the impact of the oil other than using dispersants. The question is, where is that right spot?
And so we don't know yet exactly how safe or unsafe and whether there's a significant environmental.
Well, we know the dispersants are less toxic than the oil. And we also know that when you make a decision to use dispersants, you're deciding to have the fate of the oil and the ultimate impact of the oil be absorbed in the water column, not the shore.
But I would just say that's why we continue to do that type of testing.
I just want to make sure.
To ensure that, as the Admiral said, you're using this in quantities not previously seen.
The same would apply to air quality monitoring around in-situ burnings and the flaring that's going on out there.
A couple of questions for you, Robert. Mm-hmm. You have said, the last time I was able to ask you about this, that the final legal language with BP about the $20 billion fund and the $100 million for the offshore wasn't finalized. Has it been finalized yet? And
I can check with DOJ.
Bill has said that you release it when it is finalized. Mm-hmm. Is it finalized?
Let me check. I don't know the answer.
Okay, a couple of other non-oil spill things. Are you comfortable, Robert, with the way the Romanoff endorsement from former President Clinton went down? And would you be encouraged if there were more direct communication between the former president and the political arm of the White House about things going forward?
It's not. Good try. Look, the President Clinton has relationships that extend a long time back, and will make endorsements for a whole host of reasons, including that. So, look, I was asked if we heard from them prior to that endorsement, and the answer to that was no.
Would you like to in the future?
Before you guys? Sure.
Do you feel the need in any way, shape, or form to coordinate these things, or to at least discuss them informally before they're publicly acknowledged?
I think I answered that, despite your many attempts.
The president wants the Bush tax cuts that apply to the middle class to be extended. What is the mechanism by which he's going to have Congress achieve that before the end of the year?
Let me check with the legislative affairs on that.
Okay. Lastly, do you expect the supplemental funding to be resolved this week, at least on the House side?
Certainly our hope is that. Right.
You feel confident about that?
There are conversations that have been had even today on that. I'm not going to get into whether it's this week or the first week they're back. But again, we think this is something that can be worked out, giving the president and our troops the funding that they need in Afghanistan without taking money away from important investments like Race to the Top.
Howard, can you talk about the president's meeting today with Senator Reid? What is that about the immigration?
Well, look, they're going to have an opportunity to talk about what is going to be on the Senate's agenda moving forward when they get back. Obviously, between now and the end of the year, the Senate will take up and, I believe, approve Elena Kagan to be the next Supreme Court Justice. I think we're making good progress on ratifying the New START Treaty, energy, which we've talked about earlier, small business lending, and unemployment benefits. All of that will be on the docket today that they discuss. So largely the agenda moving forward.
The president asked, or made it clear today, that Republicans are the only way this is going to happen if immigration doesn't. He met with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus this week and with advocates. Does he plan to meet with any particular Republicans in the coming days?
I don't know. I don't have any meetings that are headed in the future. Obviously, he made not too recently a series of calls to five Republicans and continues to be in contact through Legislative Affairs and the Chiefs of Staff Office on how we move forward.
And lastly, the president's going to sign this afternoon or this evening the Iran Sanctions Act. Can you talk a little bit about what he expects that to do, or why, what his assessment of that?
Well, look, this I think, and we have seen over the course of this year, we have seen Treasury make designations regarding activities and doing business with Iran. The United Nations has passed the strongest sanctions on Iran that we've ever had. We have our allies in Europe are working on continuing to make progress. The Congress has weighed in, and I know that the Treasury will continue to work on designations so that we can increase, quite frankly, the pressure on the government of Iran to live up to its commitments and give up its nuclear program. And this is, none of this stuff is a silver bullet, but all of it continues to make progress to give what we believe is far more than sufficient incentive to start to comply.
Things you want the allies to do that would mirror what the Congress has done in that regard?
Well, look, I don't want to speak directly for them, but I know they continue to work on them.
Just financial regulatory reform briefly. The President hoped to sign it this week. It's now going over to next week in the Senate. Is there any, or sorry, until after the break.
Yeah.
Is there a danger that you lose votes over that break? Are you confident that you'll have another Democratic senator back in place in time to get something done?
Well, to the next question, to the last question, yes. Look, the events of the passing of Senator Byrd certainly have delayed for the time being the passage of financial reform. I do think it's important that if you go back to January or February or even a few weeks ago, it was a question of whether this was ever going to come to be. I don't think that's now up for any debate. It's just a matter of when. I think when we get back, the President will, or when the Senate and House get back, I think the President will very quickly have an opportunity to sign the strongest regulations dealing with the financial industry that we've seen put in place since right after the Great Depression.
Admiral, very quickly, are you going to be going back down to the Gulf, or have you decided where you can now be most effective at this point in the spill? Are you better used in Washington, or is it better for you to be down in the Gulf area?
I think it's been about a 50-50 split thus far. Things going on in Washington this week having to do with the meetings with the cabinet secretaries and BP officials regarding the transition of the systems we talked about earlier. I'll be down there next week, be traveling around. I hope to get out to the Helix producer as it's hooked up, but I'll move back and forth.
Okay. And Robert, can you give us an idea of what the President will be doing over the holiday weekend?
When he returns tomorrow from the funeral, he and the family will travel to Camp David, and then be back for fireworks and such here on Sunday. We'll have more details in terms of.
Do you have guests on the lawn?
Yes.
Will we see the President tomorrow on the jobs numbers?
Yes. Yeah, we'll have guests there, yes.
Can you talk a little?
Ethan will be here
military
on Sunday.
Or something?
Yep.
Can you talk about the Netanyahu visit on Tuesday and what it will involve, how public it will be?
Right. Look, the President obviously looks forward to hosting the Prime Minister, who had to cancel a meeting, obviously, last time. I think they'll discuss a series of important bilateral issues, the implementation of Israel's recent policy changes in Gaza, regional security, our ongoing proximity talks, and the need and the hope to get quickly to direct talks. A visit, I think, is scheduled for the 6th, and we do have we'll have a pool spray there, yes.
Some Jewish groups are disappointed that the President hasn't been to visit Israel yet. Is anything along those lines in the works?
None that I'm aware of.
Robert, on immigration, one thing the President didn't mention in his speech this morning was a temporary guest worker program, which obviously it was a big sticking point the last time around and something that business groups say must be part of any compromise now. Why didn't he address the idea, and does he support a temporary guest worker program that would allow immigrants to come here without being put on an eventual path to citizenship?
Yeah. Well, I think what you just mentioned is are certainly part of the details that are ultimately going to have to be worked out, because there are different ways if you go back into the debate in 05, 06, and even in 07, there were different ways to structure guest worker programs. Some, as I think you just alluded to in your question, structured it in a way that come here for a certain amount of time and then go back before coming into the process of potentially staying here. So obviously, that is certainly one of the aspects that have to be worked through. The president sat down with Senators Graham and Senator Schumer and applauded their framework in moving forward. And obviously, this is part of what would be important for Democrats, Republicans, and the president to sit down and start working through.
So he's open to different approaches.
Well, I'm not going to close the president's options. What we need is a group on the other side that's willing and ready to have that meeting. Yes, sir.
For both of you, to get back to the House Republicans' report about the federal government's response, spelling aside, their bottom line is that they don't believe they're getting straight answers from the government with regard to the positioning of assets, to the point where some are suggesting that the government make available GPS information about where things are down there.
We have put Coast Guard officers with every parish president. We have Coast Guard liaisons for Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. Those liaisons are working down to the county level. I visited there earlier this week with the vice president. We met with Governor Crist in Florida. These officers are there to cut down on decision time, deploy resources. We've had a tremendous response on vessels of opportunity that have signed up to get their boats out there. We are putting locating devices on that, providing tactical communications and integrating that with air surveillance. We've partnered with the First Air Force, and we've taken control of the airspace in the Gulf, especially the temporary flight restriction zone over the well site, so we can integrate all that together to make it more effective. Any local leader down there that has a question on asset deployment and priorities just needs to turn to his Coast Guard liaison officer.
Is it, in a sense, real-time information?
Well, what we're going to have is this displayed on what we call a common operating picture, and anything that's got a locating device can be seen on a website, and hopefully this data will become more available as we get it up and operating. Yep.
Thank you, Robert. Question for the Admiral and question for you. Admiral, when you spoke to us at the end of May along with Ms. Browner, you mentioned that a science summit was going to be held the beginning of June at Louisiana State University. Have they released a report, a white paper from that summit, or can you summarize any of the results?
It is done. The report is out. If I can follow up and tell you where that's at, we'd be happy to do it.
Okay. And Robert, recently Senator Durbin and Congressman Don Manzullo from the President's home state of Illinois wrote the Pentagon complaining about the bidding process with a contract. It seems as though IDT, a company in Belvidere, Illinois, had been asked to bid on a contract to make protective barriers for troops, and they were turned down, and the Defense Logistics Agency promptly asked a British company, HESCO, to rebuild. They filed a complaint with the General Accounting Office, and as I said, two Illinois members of Congress have complained. Is this something the administration's following? And
I don't know if you've talked to DOD on this. I have not seen the correspondence on this, but I'm happy to look into this with DOD. Yeah.
Thank you, Robert.
One for the Admiral. You said that the onshore skimming activities have been significantly disrupted by this heavy weather. Does that mean that more oil than you would normally expect has been coming ashore in the last few days? And given the fact that this was a fairly sort of moderate storm as to what you might expect in hurricane season, has the disruption it's caused you to sort of re-examine the contingencies you might face if there was a more direct hit from a hurricane?
Well, the surge we've had in and around Louisiana has been 2 to 3 feet, so there's some areas where the oil would probably be further in to the beaches or the marsh areas than it would be before. On the other hand, weather that gets violent like that has an emulsifying effect, actually breaks up the spill. I'm not sure they counterbalance each other that well, but we'll be out there and be able to assess that very, very quickly. As it relates to hurricane preparedness, this is something we've been working on for well over 2 months. We understand there are going to be challenges associated with that, especially with evacuating the wellhead site and the production units that are out there. The number one priority will be safety of life and moving those people far enough ahead of the storm so they don't get involved with the evacuation of citizens. Our general timeline for dealing with a storm will start at about 120 hours away from when we predict gale force winds will be at the well site.
Robert, Admiral Allen, the last time you were here, I asked you a question about the dispersants and the oil, and you said over time it would biodegrade, and you said you would get back to me as how long it would take for the biodegrading to occur. Do you have that timeline?
We do, and if we didn't get back to you, it's my apologies. We'll get that to you. Jane Lubchenco and Noah are the ones that are developing that information. We get it from them, and we'll make sure you get it.
Do you remember any kind of roundabout time?
Well, it has to do with actually how the oil's been treated and the fate of the oil. Dispersed oil will biodegrade quicker. Undispersed oil will weather, and ultimately all biodegrades as part of the metabolic process of the earth. It's a question how fast it happens.
Well, what I was asking at that time, Van Jones, the former Green Czar here, said that it's about it's dispersants or not disappearance, and he said it goes down and it's more toxins that go down to the bottom of the ocean, and you said over time it would biodegrade.
Over time the oil will biodegrade, yes it will. Okay. It will.
So maybe 10, 20 years or?
Oh no, it's much sooner than that, and if we didn't get you the response, we'll get it to you.
Okay, and also Robert on immigration. The work visa issue has been a contentious point for many, many, many years, even going back to Vicente Fox when he was president of Mexico. What is the president's stance on the work visa issue?
I think this was one of the questions that we had earlier. Obviously, there are a number of different proposals that timelines, differences about how long you're here, whether you go back before you become part of the line. All of those are the issues that would need to be worked through, Democrats and Republicans.
And what kind of safeguards will be put in place to make sure that some Americans will not be without a job, so other people from other countries
right.
will get those jobs?
And those are the types of things that have been addressed in previous legislation. Obviously, one of the things that the president worked on with Senator Grassley was. As you get, obviously, as you get work permitting done, you've got to create a database to ensure that there are not you're not having undocumented workers, and you don't have businesses that are hiring those. All of those, again, are part of the comprehensive proposal that Congress needs to get into. Sam.
Solicitor General Kagan seemed to have done very well with all the people grilling her during her confirmation hearings, except for one. Arlen Specter thought that the hearings had lacked serious substance, were not revealing, and didn't meet the standards that Kagan herself had set in that 1995 Chicago University Law article she wrote. What's your response to Senator Specter's complaints about the quality of the hearings and the information that the Solicitor General...
Look, I think... I didn't see Senator Specter's note on that. I know at one point in the hearings on television, he said that she was being very forthcoming. Obviously, you're not going to get into discussing cases that you may hear in front of the Supreme Court, and that's something that has that's been the case for quite some time. Again, I think she was. She was candid, she was forthcoming, and I think she's going to be not only approved by the committee, but approved by the entire Senate. Kent?
Question for each of you. Admiral Allen, you first. Excuse me. Could you give us an update specifically on the contamination to the fishing grounds? Has it been contained in some areas? Has it spread? Has it gotten worse? Just really from top to bottom, where we're at right now on Gulf fishing and the industry.
Yeah, it tends to move around based on the trajectory of the spill, and this is something that NOAA has responsibility over through the National Marine Fisheries Service. Jane Lubchenco and I and the Vice President met with some fishermen down in the Gulf earlier this week, and one of the things we're trying to do that did need to happen, there wasn't a synchronization between the closures of the state of Louisiana, for instance, and how long they gave advance notice and when they closed a fishery and what the federal government was doing as far as the advance notice and closing their fishing areas. They now have an agreement and they will do that on the same schedule, so there'll be the right notice for the fishermen. Generally, as soon as they can clear an area for fishing, they will do it based on the trajectories, and when they close it, they'll give a 24-hour advance notice from noon one day till noon the next day. And I believe, and I don't have the percentage in front of me right now, I believe it's about somewhere around 33% of the Gulf that is covered by the closure area right now, but I'd have to confirm that.
As you know, some boats have been docked. Has there been an effort, or has there been a way to get these ships back into the waters?
Well, that's a terrific question. We spent a long time in Louisiana at a fish house where the people that actually take the crabs and so forth and then ship them out. The gentleman there was on the verge of having to close down because he had not got his claim paid yet to be able to keep operating. Once he closed down, there were 30-some vessels that would not have a place to bring their catch. The vice president spent almost 2 hours listening to them, talking to them. Some of them choose to try and stay in the fishery and fish where they can. Others want to come into the vessel of opportunity system where they get paid, and then we use them to deploy boom and do the things out there that we're trying to do for spill response. And it's a little bit mixed about what they really want to do. Right now, a very small percentage are trying to still fish where you can fish. Most of them are opting to go to the Vessel of Opportunity program.
Great, thank you. And Robert,
yes, sir.
On healthcare reform, there are some reports, there's some evidence that as some of the provisions are getting ready to be rolled out, that in some parts of the country, there, quite frankly, local offices, state, regional offices, are not prepared to handle some of this. Have you heard these reports? Is this something that's on the radar screen?
I have not myself heard it. I can certainly see if any of the folks downstairs have. Obviously, we rolled out a new website today that allows consumers to get put themselves back in control of their own healthcare through a lot more transparency at healthcare.gov, which provides a ton of information for consumers that are interested. I'll check on the specific. Thanks, guys.